This is how I knew the kidnapper called you at the restaurant. You called Peter's cell phone and left an anxious message explaining what had just happened.
Bellamy realized she was right.
We had also intercepted a call from Robert Langdon, who was in the Capitol building, deeply confused to learn he had been tricked into coming there. I went to the Capitol at once, arriving before you because I was closer. As for how I knew to check the X-ray of Langdon's bag, in light of my realization that Langdon was involved in all of this, I had my staff re-examine a seemingly innocuous early morning call between Langdon and Peter Solomon's cell phone, in which the kidnapper, posing as Solomon's assistant, persuaded Langdon to come for a lecture and also to bring a small package that Peter had entrusted to him. When Langdon was not forthcoming with me about the package he was carrying, I requested the X-ray of his bag.
Bellamy could barely think. Admittedly, everything Sato was saying was feasible, and yet something was not adding up. But how could you possibly think Peter Solomon is a threat to national security?
Believe me, Peter Solomon is a serious national security threat,
she snapped.
And frankly, Mr. Bellamy, so are you.
Bellamy sat bolt upright, the handcuffs chafing against his wrists.
I beg your pardon?
She forced a smile.
You Masons play a risky game. You keep a very, very dangerous secret.
Is she talking about the ancient mysteries?
Thankfully, you've always done a good job of keeping your secrets hidden. Unfortunately, recently you've been careless, and tonight, your most dangerous secret is about to be unveiled to the world. And unless we can stop that from happening, I assure you the results will be catastrophic.
Bellamy stared in bewilderment.
If you had not attacked me,
Sato said,
you would have realized that you and I are on the same team.
The same team? The words sparked in Bellamy an idea that seemed almost impossible to fathom. Is Sato a member of Eastern Star? The Order of the Eastern Star, often considered a sister organization to the Masons, embraced a similar mystical philosophy of benevolence, secret wisdom, and spiritual open-mindedness. The same team? I'm in handcuffs. She's tapping Peter's phone.
You will help me stop this man,
Sato said.
He has the potential to bring about a cataclysm from which this country might not recover.
Her face was like stone.
Then why aren't you tracking him?
Sato looked incredulous.
Do you think I'm not trying? My trace on Solomon's cell phone went dead before we got a location. His other number appears to be a disposable phone, which is almost impossible to track. The private jet company told us that Langdon's flight was booked by Solomon's assistant on Solomon's cell phone, with Solomon's marquee jet card. There is no trail. Not that it matters anyway. Even if we find out exactly where he is, I can't possibly risk moving in and trying to grab him.
Why not?
I'd prefer not to share that as the information is classified,
Sato said, patience clearly waning.
I'm asking you to trust me on this.
Well, I don't.
Sato's eyes were like ice. She turned suddenly and shouted across the jungle.
Agent Hartman! The briefcase, please.
Bellamy heard the hiss of the electronic door, and an agent strode into the jungle. He was carrying a sleek titanium briefcase, which he set on the ground beside the OS director.
Leave us,
Sato said. As the agent departed, the door hissed again, and then everything fell silent. Sato picked up the metal case, laid it across her lap, and popped the clasps. Then she raised her eyes slowly to Bellamy.
I did not want to do this, but our time is running out, and you've left me no choice.
Bellamy eyed the strange briefcase and felt a swell of fear. Is she going to torture me? He strained at his cuffs again.
What's in that case?
Sato smiled grimly.
Something that will persuade you to see things my way. I guarantee it.
Chapter 81. The subterranean space in which Malak performed the art was ingeniously hidden. His home's basement, to those who entered, appeared quite normal, a typical cellar with boiler, fuse box, wood pile, and a hodgepodge of storage. This visible cellar, however, was only a portion of Moloch's underground space. A sizable area had been walled off for his clandestine practices. Moloch's private workspace was a suite of small rooms, each with a specialized purpose. The area's sole entrance was a steep ramp secretly accessible through his living room, making the area's discovery virtually impossible. Tonight, as Moloch descended the ramp, the tattooed sigils and signs on his flesh seemed to come alive in the cerulean glow of his basement's specialized lighting. Moving into the bluish haze, he walked past several closed doors and headed directly for the largest room at the end of the corridor. The Sanctum Sanctorum, as Moloch liked to call it, was a perfect 12-foot square.
12 are the signs of the zodiac. 12 are the hours of the day. 12 are the gates of heaven.
In the center of the chamber was a stone table, a 7x7 square.
7 are the seals of Revelation. 7 are the steps of the temple.
Centered over the table hung a carefully calibrated light source that cycled through a spectrum of preordained colors, completing its cycle every 6 hours in accordance with the sacred table of planetary hours.
The hour of Yanor is blue. The hour of Nasnia is red. The hour of Salam is white.
Now was the hour of Kyera, meaning the light in the room had modulated to a soft, purplish hue. Wearing only a silken loincloth wrapped around his buttocks and neutered sex organ, Moloch began his preparations. He carefully combined the suffumigation chemicals that he would later ignite to sanctify the air. Then he folded the virgin silk robe that he would eventually don in place of his loincloth. And finally, he purified a flask of water for the anointing of his offering. When he was done, he placed all of these prepared ingredients on a side table. Next, he went to a shelf and retrieved a small ivory box, which he carried to the side table and placed with the other items. Although he was not yet ready to use it, he could not resist opening the lid and admiring this treasure.
The knife.
Inside the ivory box, nestled in a cradle of black velvet, shone the sacrificial knife that Moloch had been saving for tonight. He had purchased it for $1.6 million on the Middle Eastern Antiquities black market last year.
The most famous knife in history.
Unimaginably old and believed lost, this precious blade was made of iron attached to a bone handle. Over the ages, it had been in the possession of countless powerful individuals. In recent decades, however, it had disappeared, languishing in a secret private collection. Moloch had gone to enormous lengths to obtain it.